This is After Dark number 5. This is tape 8, side 1. Here's Victor Schmidt with a report on CJSB.
Hello, DXers. This is Victor Schmidt from Silver Spring reporting. On November 30th, 1994, CJSB went off the air at 6 o'clock. I have recorded about a week's worth of air checks and have condensed it down to a tribute to CJSB.
Finally, it's here.
Gotta keep them separated.
Ottawa's best rock, the new 106.9 FM.
Frequency Kenneth, that's REM from the Monster CD on Ottawa's Best Rock, the new 106.9 FM. The Bear, Rush in there from Moving Pictures, gave us Limelight, and from the Us CD, Peter Gabriel and Digging in the Dirt. 7:31, the real Darren Stevens. I'm at a loss for words.
Floyd's up lady in SS Rock's cookie.
CJSB, 540 AM. If you're sick of having this message interrupt your music and to hear us in stereo, please tune to 106.9 FM.
The Canadian SS rocks with Ottawa's best rock. The new 106.9 FM, The Bear.
That's Ocean Pearl on Ottawa's Best Rock, the new 106.9 FM, The Bear. That ends off over 30 minutes of nonstop rock and roll. Got the Scorpions, No One Like You, Kim Mitchell, Lick Your Finger, Def Leppard, Nirvana, Wilson, Metallica, Green Day with Basket Case, Guns N' Roses, Sympathy for the Devil from the soundtrack of Interview with a Vampire, and finally 5440 and Ocean Pearl. 818, the real Darren Stevens, cloudy, a little windy, and a chance of some flurry sometime this evening or overnight tonight. Overnight of minus 3, tomorrow sunny, a chance of more flurries with a high of 1. Currently it's minus 1. Yeah, that's what it is. Minus 1. You guys excited about these flurries?
Woo!
They're excited about flurries. Oh, geez.
Got a sex question. You could ask your mom.
You're having sex?
Your dad. You can do that, Dr. Ruth.
Well, there are very many different answers to your question.
Is your chance to bear it all. Sunday nights, join Sue McGarvey for an informative and fun show full of questions and comments on human sexuality, live from our studios.
Sunday Night Sex with Sue. Sundays at 8 on the new 106.9 FM. The Bear. Brought to you in part by Apex Video, your best choice for quality adult entertainment.
Your requests at 750-1069. The results are in. Here's today's Top 10 at 10 on the new 106.9 FM. The Bear.
The real Darren Stevens with the Top 10 at 10. Today's most requested song. In at number 10 from the Crossroads CD. This is Bon Jovi and Always. Song number 10 on Ottawa's Best Rock, the new 106.9 FM, The Bear, live and I alone. Song number 6 on Ottawa's Best Rock, the new 106.9 FM, The Bear, and that coming from their Throwing Copper CD. Offspring in there from Smash gave us Self-Esteem at number 7. Candlebox, Cover Me in at number 8. The Rolling Stones from Voodoo Lounge with Sparks Will Fly at number 9. And we got things going with number 10, Bon Jovi and Always. It is the top 10. 10, the real Darren Stevens with you. We got the top 5 coming up, and we'll head to the ocean in just a bit. But first, it's over to Rockadelic and Grizz Michaels.
Oh, we are having a party here tonight, Darren. When you get off, you got to come down here. I urge you. Rockadelic, Bank of Sunnyside. You can see the Sterling Ford Bear pickup with the flashing lights right out front, across from the Mayfair. The Black Dog Zeppelin tribute is ongoing right now. The boys just got on stage moments ago, so you're going to catch most of the set if you do hop on down here. Tonight we've got some great prizes from the Cyber Shop to give away, a few little other things going on. We're going to play Hide the Soul. Salami later on here. So get in for that before the night is through. Black Dog, you like your Led Zeppelin. You like it loud and hard and fast. And you are going to hear it here at Rockadelic. It's a bank at Sunnyside right across from the Mayfair. Just look for the Sterling Ford Bear pickup with the flashing lights.
Wind down the weekend and bare our souls Sunday nights with blues till midnight. Join host Mark Hall Sunday nights at 10 for the best in rock and rhythm and blues. Plus blues news and interviews. Brought to you by Tucson's, home of the South End and now West End Blues. Blues till midnight, only on the new 106.9 FM, The Bear. Hunting down today's most popular bear tracks. The top 10 at 10 on Ottawa's best rock, the new 106.9 FM, The Bear.
For the Devil on Ottawa's Best Rock, the new 106.9 FM, The Bear, and that's song number three, Guns N' Roses, that song coming from the Interview with a Vampire soundtrack. Aerosmith in there with Walk on Water from Big Ones, and at number four, and number five, 5440 from Smilin' Buddha Cabaret, Ocean Pearl. 1040, the real Darren Stevens, two songs left in the top 10 of 10. What are they? We'll find out. Piece of Crap, Neil Young on Ottawa's Best Rock, the new 106.9 FM, The Bear. It's a piece of crap, but hey, you like it. Number two, Tom Petty, and You Don't Know How It Feels from his Wildflowers CD. At 10:50, the real Darren Stevens, and that does it for the top 10 of 10. Tonight, we will do it all again Monday night, but don't forget, tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, you check out the top 20 rock countdown with the rock monster, Brian Kelly. In the next hour, we've got some Spin Doctors, hint, as well, some Tragically Hip, some Page and Plant, and a whole bunch more. We'll get right to it, 30 minutes of nonstop rock and roll with a request for some Blind Melon. But first, it's over to Rockadelic and Grizz.
Hey, Darren, you know, people have been hanging at home. They wanted to catch the top 10 at 10 with you, and I think maybe they want a place to hang. In southern Ottawa, you want great rock, it is at Rockadelic Bank at Sunnyside, right across from the Mayfair. You can catch us, you know, it's easy to find. Sterling Ford Bear pickup is out front with the flashing lights. Black Dog is on stage doing the tribute to AC/DC. Some great acts are going to be coming up here in later weeks. We'll mention those if you come on down. If you come on down right now and you come through the doors, beat the cover. If you say, hey, I'm coming down to play Hide the Salami with the Grizz. And we got some great prizes to give away here. Bearware, Cybershop t-shirts, and a few other little things going on. So get your butt down here and party in South Ottawa. It's Ottawa's first and only South End rock bar. It's Rockadelic Bank at Sunnyside across from the Mayfair. Look for the Sterling Ford Bear pickup with the flashing lights.
Of course, tomorrow Letterman is back with Dr. Woody in the morning and all the fun and learning to get you going on your Thursday. Right now, to get you going safe and sound, Bear Mobility Traffic with Ed Hand.
All right, huh?
You're listening to AM 540, CJSB Ottawa. This service will cease on the AM band after 6 p.m. tonight. Please switch over to 106.9 FM for the programming you're listening to now. It sounds better, much better, in FM stereo. Sorry for the interruption. Thanks for listening.
Review at the Rainbow at Ozzy's, the West Haven Band, Yuck Yucks, to be representing the new talent showcase. It's all the fun and merriment you need at the Knox University of Ottawa, Simon B. Carter. Tomorrow, join the real Darren Stevens for another Rocktacular Thursday Night Live Kicks Rock Cafe, 101 North Adele. Who is he on Friday? The Bear presenting Foot Toxic at Roxanne's with special guest Junk Fiend opening the show. Jimmy Vaughn at Capitol Hall Conference Center on Wednesday. And as special note here on Saturday. Anybody from Kirkland Lake, actually anybody can show up to this. Saturday, December 3rd at Curly Sports Coliseum on Bank Street. It's the Kirkland Lakers party. Go party with the Northern people and learn how to drink beer, I guess. Bear presenting Persona at the Penguin on December 6th. The 7th, the Bear presents I, Mother Earth at Roxanne's. And another chance to win your passes on the 6 o'clock Rock Report here tonight with Kath Thompson and WAP when she is coming in here. Representing Moist at the Congress Center on December 11th. That's also included in our special package that you can win here tonight. Some tickets for that show on the 6 o'clock Rock Report. Bear Blues till midnight presenting John Hammond at the Penguin December 16th. For complete club and concert listings, call the Bears Night Prowler line 225-3383.
If you're looking to get rocked with live tunes to the market, tune in to Grand Central. Thursday night, catch the Flushing Brides with Tribute to the Stones so hot, you'll swear it's me and the boys. The Flushing Brides, rocking the roof off Grand Central Thursday night. You want live rock? It's the live rock spot. Grand Central, 121 George of the Market. And don't forget, students with proper ID eat free pizza and pasta every day from 2:30 till 9.
Rock Report on the new 106.9 FM, The Bear.
This is the final broadcast for AM 540, CJSB Ottawa. As of now, this service is only available at 106.9 FM. For our friends who can only receive us on the AM band, thanks for all your support.
I don't know how many nights I listened to CJSB. I do know this, though. I do want to visit Ottawa. I really will miss you, CJSB.
It's time now for news on the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service After Dark number 5. These are news stories that were just too long to present in the normal DX Audio Service, so we'll present them to you right now. These news stories are separated by CBS Net Alert Tone. Well, it's time now to take a look at some of the things which are going on in Washington as far as the FCC is concerned. Let's start with some television action. The commission initiates a review of the primetime access rule. Advocates and opponents of the primetime access rule are gearing up for what promises to be one of television broadcast industry's bloodiest battles yet. More than two decades after adoption of this highly controversial rule, the FCC has begun a rulemaking proceeding to assess, in light of the current economic and technological conditions, whether the primetime access rule should be retained, modified, or eliminated. In its present form, the primetime access rule bars network television affiliates in the top 50 markets from broadcasting more than 3 hours of network programs or off-network programs during the four primetime viewing hours, that is, from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, and 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Central and Mountain Time. The primetime access rule was adopted in 1970 in conjunction with the financial interests and syndication rules out of the concern that the three major networks dominated the program production market, controlling much of the videotape fare presented to the public and inhibited the development of competing program sources. The primetime access rule affects the programming activities of television industry participants in several ways. First, it explicitly limits the availability of networks to dictate their affiliates' programming choices, which in turn affects the programming available to the viewers, as well as the advertising revenues associated with those programs. The primetime access rule also creates a demand for first-run syndicated programming by network affiliates. Further, primetime access rule effectively creates a supply of popular off-network programs, usually reruns, for purchase by independent stations. These programs typically generate high revenues for the independent stations. In the Commission's opinion, the television broadcast industry has changed dramatically since the primetime access rule was first embraced. The total number of commercial and non-commercial television stations has increased by 76%, while the number of commercial and independent stations, which rely most on the syndicated program, has grown by almost 450%. Moreover, there were only three national television networks in 1970. Today, Fox is emerging as a fourth network, and plans for at least two additional networks, United Paramount and Warner Brothers, have been announced. Accompanying these significant developments in the over-the-air television industry has been a substantial increase in the number of competing video distribution systems. Cable television has evolved from an embryonic retransmission medium to become a major competitor of broadcast television. And wireless cable, SMATV, home satellite dishes, and VCRs have also emerged as a viable competitor to broadcast television. As a result of this growth in the number of broadcast and non-broadcast video outlets, the demand for video programming, especially first-run syndicated programming, has risen sharply, and the three networks no longer dominate the video marketplace to the extent they once did. Based on these changes, the Commission concludes that a comprehensive review of the legal and policy justifications for the primetime access rule is in order. The agency begins this review by requesting comments on the degree to which the primetime access rule increases opportunities for independent programming producers. Specifically, the agency asks whether the primetime access rule increases the net amount of independently produced programming, as well as those programs available to the public, whether it increases the net number of independent program producers serving the market, and whether it reduces the economic value of network programming aired during prime time by limiting the potential buyers for these programs after the network run is complete. Related, the agency seeks comments on the relationship between the primetime access rule and the fine sin rule, which are presently being phased out. The agency believes that the increasing opportunities for networks to own their programming and direct its flow through the market afforded by the elimination of the fine sin rule will have some impact on the performance of independent programming producers and their ability to compete. But it is uncertain whether these new network opportunities are significant enough to warrant the retention of the regulatory constraints like the primetime access rule. The Commission next questions whether the primetime access rule accesses or make that acts to restrain the ability of the three major networks to dictate program sources for their affiliates. When the primetime access rule was adopted, the affiliates were quite dependent on the networks as the major source of their programs, and thus they may have felt that they did not have sufficient bargaining power to refuse to run programs offered by the networks. Since that time, however, a relative position of affiliates of the network has changed. Affiliates now have the opportunity of changing their affiliation, and a number of affiliates have in fact switched from one of the three major networks to Fox. Additionally, there are many more options for obtaining programming today, even without having a network affiliation, as indicated by the growth of the number of unaffiliated independent stations. Commenters were asked to provide specific evidence regarding the bargaining position of affiliates relative to their network. The agency is particularly interested in receiving responses to the following questions. During the hours outside the primetime access rule period, do affiliates in the top 50 markets carry programs other than network programs? To what extent does market dynamics in the top 50 markets dictate the performance in the smaller markets? Are the recent affiliation switches indicative of the changes in the relative bargaining power of the network affiliates to their affiliates, or are they due to other factors? To the extent that behavior of affiliates might change the primetime access rule, were modified or repealed, how would it affect the programs ultimately available to viewers? Now, the third major area of concern for the commission is the extent to which the primetime access rule encourages the development and growth of independent stations and new and emerging networks. By limiting the programming choices to the top 50 market affiliates, the agency notes, the primetime access rule affords the independent station two competitive advantages: less competition for viewers and less expensive programming. The rationale for giving these advantages was that they needed to compensate for certain inherent disadvantages faced by independent stations, such as the fact that most of them have been relegated to the UHF band, channels 14 to channel 70. Given that over 30% of the viewers still rely exclusively on over-the-air signals, the agency seeks comments on whether the disadvantages shouldered by UHF-based independent stations should support continued retention of the primetime access rule. On the other hand, commenters were also to consider whether regulatory measures such as the primetime access rule, which are assigned to encourage the introduction into the broadcast industry of increased competition in the form of new networks, remains necessary when the established networks and their affiliates now face tough competition from non-broadcast video services. In other words, the agency asks, how will the primetime access rule affect the ability of the broadcast industry as a whole to survive over time against non-broadcast multi-channel competitors? Now, even if the record in this proceeding supports the retention of the primetime access rule in whole or in part, the commission thinks that the review of the current definitions and exemptions associated with the rule is needed. For example, under the primetime access rule, Fox is not presently considered a network, and its affiliates are not considered to be network affiliates. However, concerns have been raised that it is becoming increasingly difficult to distinguish between network affiliates, which are barred from airing popular off-network and new network programming during the primetime access period, and affiliates of emerging or near networks, which may secure such programming. It has also been argued that this distinction will come even more blurred as major network affiliates realign with their near networks and are suddenly freed from the constraints of the primetime access rule. With this in mind, the commission invites comments on whether the current definition of a network continues to be appropriate. The existing exemptions to the primetime access rule permits the top 50 markets affiliates to air specific types of network and off-network programs, such as children's programs, public affair programs, fast-breaking news events, political broadcasts, and runovers of live network broadcasts and sporting events during the primetime access rule hours. In crafting these exemptions, the commission intended to safeguard existing levels of these types of programs. Comment is sought on whether the existence of the exemptions has, in fact, led to the provision that the same amount of these types of programs that would have existed without the rule. Commenters are commenters which believe that there should be a discussion whether consumer or viewer welfare has been increased by allowing these exemptions. Finally, the commission observes that if the primetime access rule is retained, either in its present form or in another form, it must be consistent with the constitutional principles. The primetime access rule has been unsuccessfully challenged as a restraint on free speech, contrary to the First Amendment, and irrespectively of whether its original or objectives have been met, the agency must determine whether it retains a justified interest in the primetime access rule as it now exists. Accordingly, parties urged under the retention of the rule are requested to add or address whether the previous constitutional justifications for the primetime access rule still apply, and to discuss the constitutional implications of the proposed alternatives to the present rule. This, by the way, is under FCC docket number 94-123 on page 73-1595, October 25th. Comments are due by January 6th of 1995, with reply comments February 6th of 1995. National radio ownership caps raised for minority owners. Minority broadcast station owners were the chief beneficiaries of the Commission's latest revision of its radio multiple ownership rule, in a move that is designed to increase minority ownership of radio stations without posing a significant threat to competition or diversity. The agency has amended its rule to permit minority entities to own and control 5 additional radio stations per service over the above the national ownership limits. As a result of the Commission's action, minority entities will now be allowed to own and control up to 25 AM stations and 25 FM stations. Non-minority entities will only be able to control up to 20 AM and 20 FM stations, but may hold a non-controlling interest in 5 additional stations per service, provided that those additional stations are controlled by either minorities or small business. Additionally, the agency promises to further explore minority ownership issues in an upcoming proceeding with an eye toward eliminating barriers currently faced by minorities who are seeking to enter the business. The Commission also takes this opportunity to offer broadcasters more specific guidance on the application of a local radio ownership rule to time-brokered agreements between stations in the same local markets. The agency previously decided not to require the termination of a time brokerage agreement that does not compete with the local ownership rules if the agreement was entered into prior to the effective date of the rules, and it has received a number of inquiries as to whether such grandfathered agreements may be renewed or extended. The agency accordingly clarifies that parties will not be allowed to renew or extend brokerage agreements, including those that are grandfathered once the initial term expires, if at the time of expiration the argument or the agreement would be permitted under the rules. Allowing renewal of time brokered agreements, it explains, when the station's combined audience shares excess of 25% cap. That would be tantamount to the owning, allowing the entities to have a controlling ownership interest in an indefinite period of time in stations that they could not otherwise own under the local ownership rules. This would be inconsistent with the competition and diversity goals in the heart of the rules. In response to inquiries regarding the transfer of time brokerage agreements, the Commission clarifies that when brokering radio stations are sold, an existing time brokerage agreement that would be barred under the local ownership rules, if entered initially at the time of the sale, may be transferred. The new owner may enjoy all rights and limitations as did the original owner, but only for a duration of the term of the brokerage agreement. For example, if a licensee's combined audience share in a large market for a station it owns and one it brokers grows to exceed 25%, or if it exceeds 25% as was grandfathered, that licensee's interest may be sold as a combined combination, and the brokered agreement may continue in effect for its duration. However, the agency indicates and continues that the purchase of a station or stations involved in a brokerage agreement may not create a new violation or elaborate an existing violation of a local ownership rule by that acquisition. Thus, a station combined that involves a brokerage agreement and which exceeds 25% of the audience share, but is nonetheless permitted under the rules, may not be acquired by a party with another station in the same market. Similarly, the station or stations combined with an audience share of 24% may not be acquired by a licensee with a station enjoying a 3% share in the same market. Another clarification of the issuance by the Commission involves the calculation of the number of stations in a particular market for the purpose of multiple ownership rules. Earlier, the agency stated that it would only operating commercial full-power stations would be counted in determining the number of stations in the market, and that non-commercial stations, translators, or stations not yet operational would be excluded. The agency clarifies that it does not intend to exclude from consideration non-operational commercial stations that are part of a transaction or that are commonly owned by a party to the transaction. While the agency thinks it appropriate to exclude non-operational stations, in calculating the number of stations in the market where it cannot be presumed that the stations will add to the competition and diversity of the market, it does not believe that this is appropriate when the non-operational station is part of the transaction under scrutiny. In such cases, it says the applicant has control and can generally be presumed to intend to put the station on the air. Finally, the Commission explains how a licensee's joint ownership of existing and expanding band AM stations will be treated under the multiple ownership rules if the licensee proposes to acquire another station. If during the 5-year transition period, when joint ownership of existing and expanded band AM stations is authorized, the licensee has not yet elected whether to move to the expanded band or to retain its existing facility, the expanded band station will be disregarded. Thus, the only principal community contour of the existing band station will be considered in determining the relative market and in calculating the number of stations in the market. Moreover, if it is necessary to determine whether a proposed combination complies with the audience share cap, only the audience share attributed to the existing band station market will be considered. As you heard on one of our prior tapes, the EBS system is changing, and also available was this press release, which came from the Pike and Fisher people in Washington, D.C. The new and improved emergency warning system is unveiled. Shortly before the publication deadline, the Commission announced that it has replaced the current emergency broadcast system with a new emergency alerting system. With its focus on speed, reliability, and efficiency, the new EAS will have the ability to alert the public more quickly and more reliably than the old EBS system, and should reduce the property damage, industry, and deaths caused by natural and man-made disasters. The major features of the EAS include, 1, a digital system architecture that will allow broadcast, cable, satellites, and other services to send and receive alerting information. 2, multiple source monitoring for emergency information. 3, a shortened minimum of 8 seconds alert tone. 4, automated and remote control operations. 5, a weekly test that is unobtrusive to viewers and listeners, as well as monthly on-air tests. 6, an ability to issue alerts in languages other than English. 7, provision for the hearing and visually impaired. 8, a prohibition on false alert signals. And 9, a mandatory standard protocol for sending messages. Broadcasters will be required to replace EBS equipment with EAS equipment by July 1, 1996. The following timetable will also apply to broadcasters. 1. Existing EBS decoders at broadcast stations must be modified by July 1, 1995 to be capable of decoding a shortened 8-second version of the two-tone alert signal currently used by the EBS. Number 2. After July 1, 1995, stations may transmit the shortened two-tone signal for no less than 8 seconds, nor no more than 25 seconds. And 3. After July 1, 1997, the two-tone signal must be used only as an alert audio signal to announce either the monthly test or actual emergency message. To encourage rapid manufacture and deployment of the new EAS equipment, the Federal Communications Commission authorized broadcasters to purchase and install the new EAS equipment in advance of the deadline set forth in the timetable. Hopefully, we'll have more details about the EAS system in our next report. Many of us have had some concern about stations which have been on the air and nobody's been around the radio station to actually be watching things. Well, the FCC has apparently been a little concerned, and they issued this recent transcript. Proposal would allow unattended operations of broadcast stations. Once again, the wonders of modern technology may make it possible to replace man with machine. Citing the many advances which have been made since in the stability and reliability and automatic control of transmission systems, the Federal Communications Commission is proposing to permit the unattended operation of broadcast stations. If adopted, this proposal would go a long way towards conserving both FCC and station resources. Now, under the current rules, each AM, FM, and television station must be operated by a transmitter duty operator holding a commercial radio operator's license or permit. The duty operator is responsible for the proper operation of the station's transmitter and must be on duty at either the transmitter site, a remote control point, or an automatic transmission system monitor and alarm point. Now, however, the availability of modern monitoring and control equipment may have rendered unnecessary the continuance of attendance of the duty operator for many, if not all, broadcast stations. The Commission therefore seeks comment on its proposal to permit unattended operations of AM, FM, and television stations, as well as low-power television stations. While the Commission is confident that most broadcasters will exercise due diligence in automating their stations, it emphasizes that its proposal would in no way diminish the responsibility of the licensees to monitor their operations and to maintain their stations in compliance with the technical rules. Next to 70s oldies, the fastest-growing music format is adult album alternative. Now, that's according to the M Street Journal. They expect to see modern rock at the top of this year's list. There's been so much attention paid to modern rock of late, and many CHRs have become modern-leaning, like Z100 in New York. But the race to modernize has begun to taper off over the past 12 months. During the same time, about 25 stations in the large markets have gone to adult album alternative. Now, where adult album alternative stations are coming from? Many resulted from a demo shift amongst the modern rock stations a few years ago when the first modern rock stations went on the air, like WHFS-FM in Washington. They played everything they could to be defined as progressive. International music, including reggae and Europop, alternative dance, alternative rock, it appealed to the college-educated 25 to 44 crowd. But other stations were also leaning more toward the 25 to 54 age group. At the same time, modern rock stations became less experimental and tightened their playlist into an almost top 40 rock rotation, thus avoiding the 25 to 54 crunch. Modern rock picked up on the now overanalyzed but then untapped zillion-dollar Generation X demo, the 18 to 34 age group. The demo shift left lots of 35 to 44s who want alternative music without a station of their own. Now, adult album alternative is now starting to step in and service this hole in the radio market. Radio's mass jump into the 25 to 54 bandwagon left many markets with 3 or 4 AC stations, and the lowest rated of these in each market are now beginning to suffer. Just about every one of these in the markets where AC could have gone country has done so. And 70s oldies has been taken up by others. But some still struggling ACs are now beginning to discover adult album alternative and are now beginning to qualify some power. It's an electric, often esoteric mix of alternative music that challenges listeners. So stations like KCSA-FM in Los Angeles, which switched over from AC-KLIT on September 1st of 1994, attract the well-educated, upper-income end of the 25 to 54 age group. A typical KCSA liner, music you didn't know you didn't know. Adult album-oriented fans are often disenfranchised with the AOR listener. For its listeners who grew up with the first AOR stations, according to consultant Dennis Constantine, former program director of adult album-oriented flagship station KBCO-FM in Denver, when the album rock format first gained its popularity in the mid-70s, its listeners were 18 to 34 years old. Today, AORs are still skewing the 18 to 34 age bracket, even though the original listeners are now in their mid-30s and to late 30s and even their mid-40s. Adult album-oriented music fulfills the needs of people in the 34 to 44 age group who want more than just a nostalgia service that classic rock stations provide. Adult album alternative playlists include both contemporary adult rock and classic rock songs. Typical artists are Lyle Lovett, Sean Colvin, Indigo Girls, Bonnie Raitt, and Eric Clapton. Both the new music of classic artists like Raitt and Clapton are played, as well as their classic hits. Programmers will also dig a little deeper into the album to play cuts that a classical rock station passes on. Moreover, by playing alternative rock artists and deeper cuts of contemporary music, as well as classic rock, adult album alternative stations differ themselves from the hit-oriented playlists of Rock AC2. In tracking of adult album alternative stations, the people at the M Street Journal found that it tends to be on the increase in the top markets. There's WBOS in Boston, for example, KMTT, Seattle, and WXRT in Chicago, as well as KCSA, Los Angeles, and KBCO in Denver. However, AAAs are popping up in small towns, especially in Connecticut, Vermont, and upstate New York. Constantine has also worked with AAA in Bozeman, Montana, where KMMS-FM is making a ton of money in that town of 30,000, according to Constantine. A growing number of advertisers do understand it. When KBCO first went adult album alternative in Denver, buyers had to be educated on it. They were sent cassettes and literatures on the station's programming philosophies. Of course, the numbers helped too. This summer's book, for example, KBCO was ranked fourth in the 25 to 54 age group with a 6.4. And again, that share is highly qualitative of a concentration of a demo educated 34 to 44-year-olds that spend some money. It also helps that there are now AAA stations in two of the markets where the biggest agencies are, Los Angeles and Chicago. A station in New York would help even more. Whether any of New York's 34 FMs would go AAA remains to be seen, but rumors were fast and furious that during the NAB convention that WYNY was going to drop country for AAA. A new morning team and a new country PD, however, implied that YNY is still dedicated to country. Still, rumors keep popping up that someone in New York may go this format soon. If it doesn't happen, it will certainly be a testimony to the format's viability. The largest radio market doesn't even have 70s oldies yet. I know that many DX Audio Service members are getting computers or have computers at the present time, and with the cost of CD-ROMs getting ridiculously low to be put in machines, this little article caught my eye in Radio World magazine. It's entitled Pike and Fisher FCC Rules Easy to Access on CD-ROM. If uncharted waters were as easy to navigate as Pike and Fisher's communication regulations on CD-ROM, we'd all be skipper sailing the high seas. Simply put, this handy multimedia compendium of Federal Communications Commission rules, notices of proposed rulemaking and inquiries issued by the FCC and United States statutes can be every station manager's safety net in case of an emergency. It can also be a highly useful resource if you're just curious about a particular rule or statute. Multimedia computer-enabled radio stations will rejoice as they slip the silvery disk into the CD-ROM drive of their Microsoft Windows-based computer if your station isn't already using it. Pike and Fisher suggests that if you have at least a 386-level computer with 2 megabytes of RAM, 4 megs is suggested for top performance, and at least 1.3 megabytes of free space on your hard drive, a monitor able to display graphics, and a mouse. No more lugging multiple volumes of paper off the shelf. Everything you need is on the CD-ROM. Communications regulations on CD-ROM never goes out of date. Subscribers receive a new disc every month, up to date as of the last day of the month before the disc is issued. The September 1994 disc was reviewed, and to make identification of the latest version easy for station personnel, this date is printed on the disc itself and is featured in each of the info bases opening screens. Installing the disc is a breeze. Simply run the installation program, and you're good to go. A Pike and Fisher program group is automatically automatically set up for you on your Windows desktop. Double-clicking the group's icon reveals separate icons for the NPRM, Rules and Statutes infobases. Double-click on the infobase you want to access, and you're quickly transported there. Infobases are set up to be accessed by double-clicking the mouse on the red hypertext links visible to them. However, a bug in version of 3.01 of the Folio Preview's read-only interface made it impossible, after a Pike & Fisher representative worked with me over the phone to edit the lname.ini file, the interface created on my Windows directory. This feature performed flawlessly. You can also click on the Open button of the screen. For more information on the Pike & Fisher CD-ROM on disk, contact the Pike & Fisher Company at area code 301-654-6262. And that's all the time we have on Side 1 for some news. Let's go over to Side 2 and listen to some air checks.